Welcome to the Unseminary Podcast. Are you looking for practical ministry help to drive your ministry further, faster? Have a sinking feeling that your ministry training didn't prepare you for the real world? Hey, you're not alone. Join thousands of others in pursuit of stuff that we wish they had taught in seminary. Buckle up and let's get started with this week's Unseminary Podcast.
Hey everybody, welcome to the Unseminary Podcast. So glad that you've decided to tune in. You are in for a treat today. I am super excited to have William Vanderblumen with us from the Vanderblumen Search Group, a friend of the podcast and just really friend of so many churches out there. William, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much, Rich. Love being a part of what you're doing and really love seeing the way that Unseminary is sort of taken off. It seems like I see it everywhere now.
Oh, that's nice. That's great. Appreciate that. Well, for folks that don't know, why don't you give us a sense of what is Vanderblumen Search Group? What do you guys do?
Yeah, so that's kind of a moving target. here's a little secret. So we started out. I tell people I am a recovering preacher. Yeah. So I might babble a little bit, but was a senior pastor, and the last church I served was about 5,000 adults and a couple mm-hmm. thousand kids, and it was a really great church, and been around a long time. It's the First Presbyterian Church of Houston. It's literally where Sam Houston went to church. So, yeah. So, you know, in my little world of Presbyterianism when I was younger, it was kind of a terminal stop, right?
You didn't, right.
That was, for lack of a better way of putting it, a brass ring.
Yeah, yeah.
Left there after 6 years, went into the corporate world and tried my hand at a large oil and gas company working with their human resources and culture and along the way worked on their succession. Mm-hmm. They had a CEO who'd been there 9 years, and for a company that size, 9 years is a lifetime.
Right.
I think average tenure is about 3.
Wow.
So he decided to do his succession, and they started and finished within 90 to 100 days. The guy they put there after him is still there 10 years later. So they've had, you know, 19 years of uninterrupted, seamless CEO leadership. The church I served, this great church, took almost 3 years to find me.
Wow. Yeah.
Then I'm there 6 years. Then they took 2.5 years to find the guy to come
after. Oh my goodness. Right, right.
So half the time with, half the time searching, and I'm just sitting there looking and I'm like, what is there a way to build
something? There's got to be something better, right?
Yeah, let's build a thing for the church that's at least as good as the tools that I saw in the business world. So that set us off in 2008 with the idea of, could we find a way to help churches find their pastor? And you say, what did Vanderblumen Search Group do? And, you know, we really didn't want to name it Vanderblumen. It's, you know, I don't want to be the lid. I don't want people asking me to do the work. We want it to be something, you know.
Yes.
But our search engine optimization consultant, you know, we gave him like, we bought 300 domain names.
Yes, right. Ridiculous. Classic entrepreneur move.
Yes. I mean, I think I have lifetime platinum status with GoDaddy.
That's great.
But nice. Anyway, we're not going to name after me. Here's some great ideas. If you got a better idea, let me know. He comes back and he says, listen, here's the deal. Your last name is so screwed up that you can actually misspell it about 100 different ways, and Google's going to take you back to your. So we just
fantastic.
Went with Vanderblumen, and we were looking for pastors, so it was Search Group.
Yes.
That's still the spine of what we do. I mean, it's definitely the backbone of our work.
Right.
But in recent years, we've had more and more relief organizations or camps, actually, mm-hmm. like mm-hmm. Where you are, mm-hmm. and Christian schools and Christian business owners like Dave Ramsey, who've asked us to find staff for them. So it's kind of branched past just people who get together on Sunday for mm-hmm. worship, right? But still the church, right? Just
kind of values-based organizations, I think I've heard you refer to it that way.
Exactly. And then along the way, we've gotten asked to do a few things that are not search. Like, we help people figure out compensation. We help people figure out succession planning. We help mm-hmm. people with their culture. So, you know, this may be one of the last podcasts I do where we call it Vanderblumen Search Group. I think we're just
really?
going to drop it down to Vanderblumen and just leave it at that.
Interesting. Interesting. Well, I, it's that great Vanderblumen name. It's like our mutual friend, Carrie Newhoff, with this great, you know, nobody can spell it name, which it actually does help, which is amazing. So that's fantastic. You know, you're a multiple time author. Your most recent book, Culture Wins, I really want to dig into that. For people, kind of long-term listeners of the podcast know, and they've heard me say this a lot, actually, when authors have been on. So I don't really like having authors on. I could have an author on every week. And I'm not really interested in that. But what I want to do is I am happy to bring an author on when I think that they have a particular message that I think the listeners are going to want to lean in on. And I'm breaking both rules. I don't normally have authors, and if I do have authors, they typically are in a local church. And William, you're doing neither of those. So why do we have you on here today? I think your book, Culture Wins, The Roadmap to an Irresistible Workplace, is a book that every church leader that's listening in should listen to today. And so what I want to do is pull apart that a little bit. Tell me, why on earth do you see yourself as like the cultural expert? You're like the guy who like built this thing from scratch. Why is it that you wrote a book called Culture Wins?
Because my team made me. that sounds wimpy, but it's true. I don't have this figured out. I don't, you know, but we started the company after a few people were on the team, and we'd started, you know, just from scratch, just Adrian and me and Moses, our poodle. And, you know, as we added people, we realized we really like working with each other, and we decided it's probably better to hire people that we like working with than people we don't. the early genius, right? And that led us, and frankly, Rich, I was pretty burned and tired of strategic planning and 5-year plans and mission, vision, values, and all the stuff that I'd been doing, which was such a big deal in the early 2000s in the church world. And I was like, let's just not do any of that. Let's just figure out what our cultural values are. We had no idea what we were doing. We kind of invented a process along the way, and there's a process, I guess. But
nice, very nice.
Couple years later, we started winning all these awards.
Yeah.
Like best place to work, best company culture, and best office space, best office dog. I mean, like, it got kind of crazy. It's just all in a row.
Right.
And I didn't. And so then you get asked to speak on these things, and then you get asked to write on it. And, you know, the folks over at Forbes had me writing, and they were like, why don't you write on that a little bit? And, you know, then publishers come and say, you should do this book. And I really don't know what we did. Mm-hmm. I don't know how we did what we did.
Yeah.
I don't want to write this book. And, you know, somebody on our team pointed out, said, William, you know, we're not going to keep winning these awards forever.
Right.
Write it now. And so I agreed. And I said, I'll do it if we don't just tell our story.
Right.
Because we don't have it all figured out. So I got like 5 different magazines that had like the actual paper magazines, which is crazy, that had their top company culture awards. We got Fortune and Inc. and, you know, Forbes and a couple others, and handed them to one of our newer employees. And I'm like, you know what? I'd like to interview as many of the CEOs of these companies as possible. So can you go figure that out? Mm. And he just stared back at me like, how am I going to find the CEO?
Yes. This?
But we ended up, you know, having about 150 conversations.
Wow.
And we also looked back a lot of, I think if you talk to a lot of really, quote, successful pastors, you know, big churches, and you get them where they've got their guard down a little and you ask them how they figured out all the great things they're doing, most of them would tell you, you know, we sort of stumbled into it.
Right.
Most of them did not, and I know we did not sit down and have a master plan for culture. It just sort of happened. And looking back, I can reverse engineer it. And so we reverse engineered it, and we said, this is what we did and what we're doing. And then we laid it against these best practices that we found from other companies, and including, you know, completely secular companies. And then people like the folks at North Point Church, which is a church we have in the States here in the Atlanta area that maybe some people have heard.
Maybe a few people have heard.
So, and we talked to Chick-fil-A, and we talked to Dave Ramsey. So it's a real nice spread. And what we found is nobody really knows what they're doing. This is a new thing, and it's particularly coming of age as baby boomers are moving out of the workforce and there aren't many people my age in their 40s. Mm-hmm. And you've got all these millennials coming in behind who really love this sort of thing. So everyone's kind of figuring it out as they go, but it's amazing how many of the companies are doing some of the same best practices. So long recovering preacher answer for a short question. But in short, you know, I didn't want to write the book.
Right.
But I think it's a blend of our story and what we've learned from studying some people who are a little farther down the road, and hopefully it'll help some church leaders and maybe even business owners that are listening.
Yeah. One of the things that I love that you kind of come back to time and time in the book, you talk about being committed to your kind of crazy, or you refer to first person, our kind of crazy. What would you say are, and that seems to be common. A lot of organizations that have a deep sense of culture, there is kind of, they look at the world differently than other people, right? They have kind of a slightly different look. They kind of see things a little bit differently. What would you say are some of the ways that your particular organization looks at the world a little bit differently, that has your kind of crazy that makes you unique? And there's a lot in the book, so you don't need to unpack all of it, but a few pieces that kind of stick out for you.
Well, you know, I think there's a realization, you know, the longer we've worked, we've overseen like 1,100 pastoral transitions now, and the longer we work with all these churches, the more convinced I am that churches are staffed with broken people.
Right.
You know, and we're broken too. And you can substitute, if you're trying to not offend people who are not spiritual or whatever, just crazy.
I mean, right.
We're all a little crazy.
Yes.
And the way you make it work is not trying to find people that aren't crazy, but finding people who have the same alignment of crazy that you do, or the same brokenness. I mean, like, so some of the things we realize, and we ask this one question. This is a question that I think any leader could take into a team meeting to start to uncover their cultural values. Mm-hmm. This question, we said, when we're functioning at our very, very best, what are we doing that's common to us but would be uncommon to other teams around us?
Oh, that's good. That's really good.
So, you know, that's a nice way of saying what kind of crazy are we. And you know, one example, and I've used it a lot, but one of our 9 cultural values that we uncovered in a process that we, you know, outline in the book is we are almost dysfunctionally responsive to people.
That's great.
I mean, it's, you know, why are you calling me back at 10 o'clock? You should wait till tomorrow. You know, these are things that we hear a lot. Man, y'all got back to us fast. And it's not that we're better. I don't know if we're just OCD or what, but that's a thing. And it is a direct extension of who I try to be when I'm at my best. Mm-hmm. What's uncommon to me that's uncommon to others. And it started, you know, when you start a business all on your own with no safety net, when someone calls you and says, would you consider helping us? You call them right back.
Yes. Right. Absolutely.
So it became like ingrained in us. And when we told stories of our biggest wins over and over and over, that was one of the things that came up. Well, we got back to them quickly. They loved how we got back. So long story short, it turned into a value that we call ridiculous responsiveness. Mm-hmm. And we want it to show not just, you know, responsiveness. You know, that's too plain vanilla. It needs to show the dysfunction. It's ridiculously responsive. I mean, I would love it if no one would ever use excellence as a value again. Like, everybody has excellence.
Yes.
I want somebody to have, you know, we're the church that strives for mediocrity. You know, no, you don't really hear that. But we took excellence and we said, you know, it's not just when it's done right. It's when our clients come back and say, I cannot believe y'all went to that length to get this done. So it's wow, making excellence. It's a different way of saying it. So that's just a couple of
It's funny you say that, because I my experience with your organization has been very the ridiculous responsiveness thing, and I didn't realize that was a cultural value until at one point I saw a picture of, I think it's your newest office, where you've got, you know, all your values up on the wall and that's plastered across there. And even today, for today's interview, we had a bit of a mix up, or not a mix up, but just a little delay on the timeline, and I think I got 3 emails from the Vanderblumen Search Group about like, hey, hey, just so you know, William's going to be like, and it was like, come on, it's like 5 minutes, you know, late or something. It's not a big deal at all. But that's wonderful. Or like, you know, if in the past when I've reached out from a client point of view to Vanderblumen, same thing. I'm like, it's like breakneck speed response, which is amazing. And it's amazing, I think, in an increasingly digital world, how, you know, that is really a strategic advantage to people. Because I think so many times we email things. I did it yesterday. I emailed a bunch of stuff, some companies in town, because I need to get some work done. I'm going to get that work done. The guy who got back to me the fastest today, he's already at the top of the list, right? He's already thinking, you know, I would be interested in hearing about that. Can you tell us a little bit about the culture whip? This was, I found, a fascinating kind of part of the, you know, the book. You talk about kind of assigning someone who's kind of going to worry about culture in the church. Tell me a little bit, or in the organization, tell me a little bit about, you know, what that role does.
Yeah, well, and it might be worth pointing out that the book is really focused on staff cultural values,
yes,
right? Not church-wide. Now, if you're listening and you're a church planter and you've, hey, I don't have any staff, you've probably got some key volunteers that function a whole lot like staff. So whatever functions as your core team, but not the whole church. So
right.
For us, one thing we ended up doing and didn't even realize we were doing it the right way is we said, gosh, if we're going to do all these cultural things, we're going to have a calendar, we have a budget, we have a reading list, we have all these things. Somebody's got to be in charge of that.
Right.
And it probably doesn't need to be a rotating volunteer. So it started with Katie. Mm-hmm. Hey, Katie, can you give like 5 hours a month to this?
Mm-hmm.
And it's part of your paid salary. It's not a volunteer thing.
Yep.
And that's grown into, we're actually on a new Katie now. first Katie became, Katie now has a new last name, and then Katie has a baby, and now Katie's building a culture at her home, so
yes,
which is awesome.
Nice.
But the new Katie, she probably spends 30 to 35% of her work week on culture.
Wow, that's amazing.
And you know, I'm like, ah, this is money.
So
spending.
Put that in context. How big is your team?
We have I can give you the senior pastor answer or the exec pastor answer. Which one do you want?
The exec pastor answer.
The exec pastor, the accurate answer,
yes,
would be 40 full-time employees on site every day.
That's amazing. So and to think for, you know, because that's like, that's a big team. That's not a massive team to have
no.
You know, a third of your of one person's role working just on culture is amazing. That's, I'm just saying, that's a great investment. That's amazing.
Well, you would think it's a stupid investment, frankly. Well, I mean, why spend the money? You know, some listener out there that's a client of ours is going, we paid them money and they're doing the culture with the money we put. No. One thing I found with culture that was true with every company I interviewed, mm-hmm, when you ask them, why do you spend the money on this? They said, because it creates retention.
Right, right.
People stick around longer if you have good culture,
mm-hmm,
and you add up the return on investment of keeping somebody just 1 year longer than you, mm-hmm, would have had them otherwise.
That's good.
Then it's more than paid for itself. So, mm-hmm, so the we titled this, it was almost the book title, mm-hmm, The Culture Whip. you know, in the States, we have,
yes,
each party in Congress has a whip. That,
yep,
the minority majority, and the job is just to make sure people vote like they're supposed to and get things done. And so,
yep,
there's, it's assigned. I would say we've had a couple clients say, oh, you know, our children's pastor's wife can do that on a volunteer. No.
Mm-hmm.
Paid, part of their job, part of the review, compensation's tied to how well they're doing it. You know,
mm-hmm,
that's the idea behind it. And one of the people we interviewed from HubSpot, which is a software company, mm-hmm, that is very much at the front of things, best place, mm-hmm, to work in Boston every year.
Mm-hmm.
We talked to their chief culture officer, and she has a whole team underneath her.
Now,
they're a couple thousand employees, but I think we fell into the right answer with that, and we're still learning it.
Yeah. So question that I was struck by while I was reading your book was, and I don't know how to say this politely. We're friends, so hopefully I was trying to, as I was preparing for this, I'm like, I got to figure out some nice way to say this. You know, it's interesting to me that what you do as a company is place people. Like what you do is, and by definition, most of those, I don't know what percentage, this could be my misunderstanding, the majority of those are actually external hires, where your kind of organizations, churches primarily, are hiring people externally. It's fascinating to me that here's a book from you, and a kind of a drive in the book, really, and actually at one point you discussed this, you know, you talk about really the value of kind of hiring from in, building from from, you know, up from the ground. How do you reconcile those two things? Again, I'm not actually challenging you, but it's
no, a, no, no, no,
you
know, no. It's a great
how
question.
How do you work that those things out?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think a couple things. First of all, the reason I started what we started here was because I wanted to see the church move farther and faster.
Yep.
You know, why should a church, a great church, like First Pres Houston, spend half of their time without leadership?
Right. Yeah, it's bad.
So that's bad. And that needs to get solved. So if we end up working ourselves out of a job where everybody can raise up their own leaders and nobody needs to hire from the outside, that's awesome. Right. That's a win. And I'll take that. I think there's probably less financial reward here and more reward later. And I'm okay with that portfolio.
Yep. Yeah, right. Know? Exactly.
Now, having said that, I grew up in Western North Carolina, like deep in the woods. You're probably not old enough to remember a film called Deliverance.
Okay, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, so that's near where I grew up. And
nice. Okay.
And for those who do know the movie, you know I'm telling the truth when I say I've seen it firsthand. Constant inbreeding doesn't end well.
Nice. Great. So, that's a vivid picture you've just painted.
I think it's true on staff levels too. I think that, you know, they're the smartest clients we have that, and I'm talking about very large organizations that have big staffs, have actually developed ratios of, well, we know we need this much from the outside for it to, you know, create enough variety and put new eyes on things and not just be the way we've always done it. Mm-hmm. And, if it's always outside hires, that's a little strange. I do think more, I don't want to say older churches, more established churches, like churches that have been around like First Presbyterian, they're frankly just used to it all being outside hires from within a larger Presbyterian family. And not, you know, the non-denominational world where you're raising up from within. But we love to see great internal hires. A lot of times we'll get hired when, huge search we're doing right now for a very large church, senior pastor search. And they have three internal candidates. And when they called us, so we have three internal candidates and we want you to assess them. And we also want you to look everywhere else because we don't want to make this change without really knowing what we're doing. So I don't know if that reconciles things, but totally get the tension you're pointing toward. And it is not lost on us that writing this book probably costs us immediate business.
No, that's good. And I've said, you know, in other contexts, I've said, the shorthand, which is not, you know, maybe not the, you know, the best way to think about it, but the shorthand is if you're looking to kind of sustain a culture or push a culture forward in a particular area, you really should be looking for at an internal hire. But if you're looking to shake up and grow and change and do something different in an area, that really an external hire is a great thing to do. I think I get a little bit spooked when I hear churches on either ends of those spectrums, when they're like, we will never hire anybody externally. I'm not sure that that's great. Like I think the dogmatic nature of that could be a problem. And then vice versa, if I think I've probably have, you know, suffered in my leadership from looking external too much, as opposed to saying, hey, we've got to, you know, look internally. How can we build people up? So that's great. That's a great,
funny thing is, Rich, we're dealing with the same thing here.
Right.
We have, historically, we hired people that have great track records at churches, like Tim Stevens, you know, at Granger, Jay Mitchell. Just a long list of people who have, 15, 20 years of church experience that want to leave the church they're serving and serve the larger church. And that's great, but that's not scalable and repeatable. Those people don't grow on trees. So we've said, you know, we need to build an internal system for developing our people. And, one of our best consultants right now, we grew up from within, and she has never served on a church staff one day in her life, and clients love her. So we deal with the same thing. Can we grow them up from within? Do we need to hire from outside? And I think you're right. Dogma on both sides is probably dangerous.
Yeah, that's great. Well, I really do, like I've been saying, you know, friends, I really do think you should pick up this book. It's a good read. It's quick. It's not like super heavy, but it's, I think, really to the point. Lots of great examples. I think it's interesting because you obviously come out of this, you know, your business is the kind of the church world, but you give a lot of great examples that aren't just specifically in the church world, which I think is for church leaders, particularly who's listening into this is kind of a great balance for you. Could be a great conversation starter for, you know, for your team or for your, you know, leadership team. You take this, read this through together and really, you know, try to, you know, ask the question, what do we need to work on? What are those things in our, which was for sure, as I was going through it, I was writing notes like, oh gosh, there's some stuff I need to be thinking about internally. You know, I've said this in other contexts. I said this on the review on Amazon. If I'm honest, a lot of culture books about, you know, just make me feel guilty. I'm like, gosh, I am a terrible, terrible leader and I need to just stop leading. But I appreciate your style. I feel like, you know, you're open-handed and like, hey, here's some stuff we're learning. You don't come at it from like, you know, you're the smartest person in the world. You're just like, hey, here's some stuff we're learning, which I think is wonderful. That's fantastic. You quote in the book multiple times, actually, that two-thirds of people in America are hate their jobs. And, you know, what would happen if two-thirds loved it, you know, and that's, I think, is a great vision for folks. Where can people pick up a copy of the book if they want to pick it up? I'm assuming Amazon. Are there other places they should be going for it?
Yeah, Barnes & Noble, Amazon, we kind of ran through everything they had. And okay. Then you've probably run into this too. They just, yeah. Amazon runs the world.
Yes.
But culturewins.org okay. will take you to wherever the freshest supply is. We're just redirecting that as we see, is it Barnes & Noble? Is it culturewins.org.
Okay, great.
That'll get you there. And you know, if folks want to read, like I want to read some of what these people have written before I go buying a book, go to vanderblumen.com. As I said at the beginning, just spell it however you want to. It'll get you there. And there, I think we crossed the threshold. I think there are over 1,500 free resources on that site to help you build and run and keep your team. So hopefully that'll be helpful to some of your listeners.
Yeah, it's great. I've said to your team before, and I've said this to even when your people aren't even in the room, and I've said, because people have asked about the content marketing thing, and like, how do you do a good job kind of getting the word out? And I said, what you need to do is just mimic what Vanderblumen Search Group does. They do a great job on that. You guys generate a lot of content. I really appreciate being on the show today. We've got these lightning round questions. Are you okay if we go through those and ask you?
Oh, sure.
Lightning round questions. That's great. So happy to have you here. What's an online resource? I'm kind of intrigued by this that makes, you know, that helps you guys, that pushes you forward in your business.
HubSpot, nice. Their blog. Yep. They've got a blog for marketing and for sales. And if you don't, well, we don't sell. If you are a pastor, you are in sales.
Right.
So it's helped me because it talks about the changing nature of marketing and sales, which is moving very, very fast. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's great. What's a book you've read in the last, I don't know, maybe 6 months to a year that's shaping your thinking, I can't get the word out.
You know, we took our teenagers on a college scouting visit to New York City earlier this year, and we wedged in a trip to see Hamilton. And I thought, fantastic. You know, if I'm going to spend all this money
yes.
on this show, I'm going to go read the book about it.
Right.
So the book, Hamilton, is just phenomenal. Now, it's a beast. It's about 800 pages.
Right.
But what it's done for me, it really talks about how these young, entrepreneurial, inexperienced leaders that were the founders of our country built scalable, repeatable government. And they foresaw things. They were thinking 100 years ahead. Mm-hmm. Before they put something in place. So the framers of the Constitution really were like making foundational decisions about should the capital be in the financial capital of the country or should it be in neutral ground?
Right.
And just like that kind of thinking makes me go, okay, I need to drop back and think about scale and end products and make decisions today that don't block me from being able to do what I want to do tomorrow.
Oh, that's really good. That's fantastic. Super jealous that you got to see Hamilton too. So that's great. What's another organization that you're looking at that kind of inspires you? You have a unique kind of vantage point. You see a lot of churches and organizations around the country. What's inspiring you these days?
Well, I mean, Unseminary is pretty much on speed dial. Seriously, you guys are doing great work. I think if we have a big brother, mm-hmm. like as a company that we're looking to, like, how do we do this? They've already paid the stupid tax. It's Ramsey Solutions, Dave Ramsey.
Okay, right, great, yeah.
He and his team taught us very early on, Adrian and I, when it was just me
yep.
creating revenue, mm-hmm. we took both of us a week off and paid money to take a week off. So with, I mean, that's 2% of your year gone.
Right. Yeah.
To go on retreat with their team and about 100 business owners and just walk through how to run things. And the way Dave has kept to his values and been absolutely generous and his retention is amazing. I think they're almost 700 employees
wow.
by now. So yep. it's, that's that's a place we look to quite a bit.
Mm-hmm. That's fantastic. That's great. If you could get 15 minutes with any leader alive, who would you want to get that with and why?
Oh, my goodness.
It's a hard question.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I can think of several right offhand. I think any leader alive, well, I could be bad and say Putin's fascinating.
Yeah, no, that's good. You'd have to go without your shirt on, though.
That's just a thought that runs through my head.
Yeah, absolutely. That's an interesting one.
Question before, and I've said the Pope. Yeah. I think that's just really – and we have a little bit of a heartstring toward him. We were in Rome on vacation – totally unforeseen when he was elected.
Oh, Adrian, wow.
It was 5 years ago now. And it was pretty cool. Instagram had just come out and it was only the early adopters on there.
Yep.
And we got a picture. Our tour guide actually got us right up on the square when the whole thing went down. And
really?
We got a picture of us on the square with the white smoke going up behind us. And I posted it and the caption was, "It always feels good to finish a big search." And
that's great.
And my Catholic friends that don't go to church still think we actually had something to do with it. It was pretty funny.
That's funny. That's cool. That's a good one. Well, I think
the why is, you're running this giant organization. How do you do this? And what are you learning?
Yeah, absolutely. And he seems to have a, he's a bit of a reformer, right? Is kind of pushing the organization in new directions and he's stirring the pot a little bit over there, which is wonderful. So, great stuff. I know running an organization like you're doing, growing, doing all kinds of stuff all over the place takes a lot out of you. What do you do for fun? What do you do when you just kind of want to kick back, relax, enjoy life a little bit?
Well, I used to play golf. We have 7 kids, so I don't play much anymore. We run slowly, and Adrian and I are kind of strange. We really would rather be around each other than anybody else. So we're always going off and maybe taking a business trip together, making a regular date night. And I know that sounds pious. It's not. It's just, we're both the same kind of crazy and we like being around each other. So, yeah.
That's cool. Well, William, I really appreciate you being on the show. Thank you so much for giving us your time today. I'd encourage people to pick up a copy of Culture Wins. Drop by culturewins.org. If there's, or to find Vander Blumen, just try any crazy spelling and you'll get it on Google. Is there anywhere else people can kind of track with you if they're looking to get more information?
Yeah, it's all there on vanderblumen.com.
Great.
So all the Twitters and Instagrams and Facebooks, and you can find it all there.
Thank you so much, William. Appreciate you being on today.
Thanks, Rich. Appreciate what you're doing.
Thank you for tuning in to this week's Unseminary podcast. Don't be shy. We'd love to connect. Check out Unseminary Inbox. You can sign up at unseminary.com, and we'll send you helpful training resources every week. Plus, you'll gain immediate access to our exclusive members area with tons of resources you can use. Connect with Rich on Twitter at Rich Birch or through email rich@unseminary.com. Don't forget to check out the show notes for this episode at unseminary.com. It includes links to what we talked about today and more. Leave a comment. We'd love to hear from you. Did you enjoy today's episode? Drop by iTunes and leave a review. Thanks again for tuning in to this week's Unseminary podcast. Join us next week when we'll learn more stuff we wish they taught in seminary.